Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. We're providing you news and commentary rooted in a commitment to individual liberty, personal responsibility, limited government, and the rule of law. Coming up, I'm going to visit with Professor Larry Bell, endowed professor at the University of Houston in space architecture. Right now we have with us Michael O'Neill. He is the Landmark Legal Foundation vice president. Michael, thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Bob.
Thank you, Michael. Can you tell us about the Landmark Legal Foundation?
Absolutely. We are a national nonprofit legal that we uphold the Constitution and our founding principles through legal advocacy and education. We advance an originalist approach to the Constitution, and that means what the words in the Constitution mean what they meant at the founding. We defend our nation's bedrock principles of liberty, and we fight tyranny.
Fantastic. Do you have a website?
Yes, we do. Landmarklegal.org.
Landmarklegal.org. So, Michael, the president Biden wrote an op-ed for the, I think it was in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, I'm not sure which, but in any event, he's kind of outlined his assault on the Supreme Court. He wants to make it, quote-unquote, better. Wanted to get your thoughts.
Exactly. Well, what he did was he had three pillars, three points that focusing on his proposal. The first was he wanted to reverse the Supreme Court's decision in U.S. versus Trump. He wants, this was the last decision of the 23-24 term. This is the decision where the court ruled that there is limited presidential immunity from criminal prosecution, limited immunity, and President Biden wants to reverse that. The second thing Biden wants to do is impose term limits on the Supreme Court justices. He wants to impose an 18-year term limit on sitting justices. And I don't really know how that would work in practice. I don't know if that means he would force out Justice Thomas and Chief Justice Roberts because they've served in excess of 18 years. But he wants to impose the term limits on justices and have a new Supreme Court justice be appointed every 2 years. And then the third thing he wants to do is impose a binding code of conduct on the Supreme Court justices. He believes that justices like Justice Thomas, Justice Alito, are operating outside the bounds of their ethical obligations, and he wants to have some sort of outside group impose some sort of binding code of conduct on those justices. Again, all three of these proposals are radical. All three of these proposals are wrong. They are unconstitutional on their face, and they would radically remake the United States Supreme Court, essentially turn the court into a political branch as opposed to a judicial branch, which what it was originally intended to do.
You know, this thought comes to mind as I'm listening to you, Michael, in many cases, people like socialists and communists, they want to remake the world, whereas I think, typically speaking, conservatives want to remake themselves and make themselves better. So it's somewhat ironic that Biden wants to talk about ethics, in my opinion. But nevertheless,
absolutely.
Go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's funny that a man who served in the United States Senate for decades upon decades, I think it was 1976 or 1975 when he first got into the Senate,
yeah,
and then went on to be vice president and then president, who hasn't worked a day in the private sector and who's worked for decades, is now suddenly become open to term limits for Supreme Court justices. I never heard him say anything about term limits for senators when he was serving for 30, 40 plus years in the United States Senate.
This is so interesting. So, my opinion, this has no chance of passing. I think part of the recommendation would take a constitutional amendment, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's the term limits part of it. But to me, it's just a shiny object he's pushing out there in order to take the focus off of the border and the economy during this election.
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail right on the head. I think his efforts are fairly transparent at this point. He realizes that there's no chance of this getting through Congress, and certainly no chance of having an amendment enacted, which, as you just pointed out, would be necessary to impose term limits on the Supreme Court justices. But he's doing it really, I think, for, as you said, two reasons. Number one, to pander and secure to his base. Mm-hmm. Look, there is a strong contingent on the liberal base and the Democrat base that is incensed with the direction of the United States Supreme Court. And I really think you know, we talk about Dobbs, we talk about the reversal of Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey, but I think what's really driving the left crazy is the return of the separation of powers doctrine to the forefront. In other words, they're putting administrative agencies like the Environmental Protection Agency, the Department of Education, for example, is trying to forgive student loans unilaterally. They're putting them back in their constitutional box, if you will. They're saying, look, These agencies can't enact laws. That's Congress's job. These agencies have to act within their statutory authority. The Supreme Court's done this by revoking the Chevron doctrine, by imposing the major questions doctrine, and by simply saying, look, agencies, you have to stay in your lane. And I think that's incensed the left. And so Biden has to be perceived as doing something to ensure that his base is secure. And then the second point, Bob, is really to continue this unceasing pressure on the sitting United States Supreme Court justices. If you recall, a few years ago, Senator Schumer said, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, you'll reap the whirlwind if you reverse Roe versus Wade. So that's just another example. This is just another example of this pressure that the left and the media and that the government and the Democrats specifically are pressing on the justices to try to have them kind of evolve in their jurisprudential philosophies.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And you mentioned the Chevron doctrine. To me, this raises all kinds of legal questions. I know the wheels of justice grind slow, but they grind fine. Are we going to see some of the things and the plans that they've made in the EPA and others to see that question now using the new ruling on the Chevron doctrine?
Yeah, I think so. I think what you have now is when private parties decide that they're going to challenge some of these, these regulatory actions. Now they're going to have a fair shake in front of the federal judiciary. Mm-hmm. No longer are justices or judges at the district court and the circuit court levels. This is where really the vast majority of these things are litigated, not at the Supreme Court level, because the Supreme Court only takes, a relatively few number of cases every year. So what you're going to see now is litigants are going to have a fair shot. The judges' hands are no longer tied. And I equate it to this. Look, when you're litigating against the federal government, you're already at a disadvantage because they have just unlimited resources and unlimited time.
Right.
But at least now with the revocation of the Chevron doctrine, courts are going to be able to exercise their Article III authority, their judicial authority, and look at both sides equally and not have to defer to the administrative agency if all things in the breach. So before when Chevron was operative, the courts, judges would have to say, well, sounds like the government's making a good case. I'm going to have to defer to them. No longer. Now it's an even playing field, and litigants are going to have a fair shot when they're challenging the authority of these these regulatory actions.
So, Michael, this is a pretty big departure from precedent in the Supreme Court, isn't it? In other words, the Chevron doctrine decision?
Oh, absolutely. This was a decision from 1984. So it's been on the books for, I think, 40 years. And it's really helped abet the explosion of the administrative state. It was never really intended to be that. It was kind of a minor decision at the time, but it's been seized on subsequently as this decision that allowed, that really obligated judges to defer to agencies' interpretations. Statutory authority. And again, as you've seen, if you look back in the mid-80s, the early 80s, and now you at the administrative state, now you look at it today, and yes, it's certainly been integral to the explosion of the size and scope of the administrative state. So now it looks like the field of play has changed. We're going to see, again, this is a decision from last term, so now we're going to see how this plays out in the courts going forward.
Absolutely. And there's going to be a certain degree of accountability to Congress, won't there be? In other words, they're going to have to really pay attention to the wording and what they're and the laws they're passing.
Absolutely, that's a fantastic point. This really puts the ball back in the court of Congress, and it says, Congress, you are the branch of government that was designed under our constitutional structure to make laws. And Congress, you're going to have to actually make laws. You're not going to be able to pass these vaguely worded laws and somehow hope that the administrative agencies are going to do your dirty work. You're going to actually have to face the political accountability of making the tough decisions and actually enacting specific laws that convey specific authority to administrative agencies.
So interesting, Michael. So final question, what's going to become of this proposal on the part of the president?
Well, I don't think anything's going to go forward with it. I don't think the Congress is going to do anything from a statutory standpoint regarding the binding code of conduct. And I don't think from a constitutional amendment perspective it's going to go forward. However, what I do say is this is another step in this unceasing pressure campaign. So I don't think it's going to be the last you hear of it. I think depending on the political outcomes of what happens in the fall and going forward, I think certainly the United States Supreme Court is under the yoke or is under the microscope of the left, and they're going to continue to push these sorts of they'll call it reforms, but they're going to continue to push these sorts of measures going forward.
Michael O'Neill, again, Landmark Legal Foundation Vice President. The website is landmarklegal.org, landmarklegal.org. Michael, great interview. Thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
It's a pleasure, Bob. Have a great day.
You as well. Thank you. All right, coming up, we're going to visit with Larry Bell, endowed professor at the University of Houston Space Architecture and author of many books. His latest, Architectures Beyond Boxes and Boundaries, My Life by Design. It's a great read. We're going to do that and more right here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of The Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.